everybody on both sides. We're seeing that now in Iraq, where the minds of our soldiers are being poisoned by being an occupying army in a land where they are not wanted. And the results are terrible.
To see all of the highlights of Democracy Now! Over 20 years, go to our website at democracynow.org. That last voice, the late, great historian Howard Zinn. Special thanks to Mike Burke and all the team that makes Democracy Now! Happen over these decades. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We thank you.
5:49 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Wamba at the Analog Cafe, Friday, February 19th at 10 p.m. Wamba is a Portland-based band that mixes traditional West African rhythms from Ghana with jazz, funk, and Afrobeat styles. Friday, February 19th, there will be a special two-set performance. The evening starts at 10 p.m. at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 39th Annual Portland International Film Festival hosted by the Northwest Film Center. 97 feature films and 62 short films from all over the world will be playing through February 27th, all over Portland. There are also special focus programs, including Global Classroom, a Made in Oregon shorts program, PIFF, After Dark, Again. That's the 39th Annual Portland International Film Festival screening films at multiple locations throughout Portland until February 27th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland City Council delays a vote over a proposal to relocate the Right to Dream 2 homeless camp.
And Oregon state lawmakers pass a bill to raise the minimum wage.
And the prisoner who has been held in solitary confinement longer than anyone in history is released.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 19th, 2016. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund. Oregon homeowners struggling with foreclosure will be eligible for additional funding under a grant from the U.S. Department of Treasury. The money comes from an extension of the Hardest Hit Fund, a federal program started in 2010. Oregon initially received $220 million, and that money was used to help over 11,000 homeowners. The money works two ways. It can either help unemployed or underemployed homeowners with monthly payment assistance for up to 12 months, or it can be used to help homeowners refinance their mortgages to reduce interest rates and make payments more manageable. The additional $36.4 million of assistance will help to keep these programs going, according to state housing officials. To find out more information about the program, including program eligibility, visit OregonHomeownerHelp.org. That's OregonHomeownerHelp.org.
Following a four-hour meeting yesterday, the Portland City Council delayed a vote over a proposal to relocate the Right to Dream 2 homeless camp from its present location in Old Town to an industrial area in southeast Portland. Now the proposal to give Right to Dream 2 a legal camping space at Southeast 3rd and Harrison is on next week's City Council agenda. It will be heard Wednesday at 2 p.m. Yesterday, the Council heard from representatives of Right to Dream 2, which has operated at the corner of Northwest 4th Avenue and Burnside since 2011.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate your time, and I really do appreciate that all the work that has gone into all of this. So I just wanted to say thank you for that to start with. My name is Trish Reed. I am a member of Right to Dream 2. I am also on the board of Right to Dream 2. One of the things that is encouraged is that you expand and better yourself as a member of Right to Dream 2. I recently have acquired a part-time temporary job and do lots of work around the rest area as well. Sorry, I am a little nervous.
Go ahead, you're fine.
I'm just going to give you some quick statistics of what Right to Dream 2 has accomplished over the 4 years that we have been on the fourth and Burnside site. We have been able to house 297 people. We have had 286 people find work. 35 people have kicked extensive drug habits. We've had 17 women be able to keep their children. We have had 15 people complete online education, two of whom just graduated this last year, one from PCC and one from PSU. Crime rates actually didn't go up when we moved in. They actually went down a little tiny bit. So we are in solidarity with many organizations, including the Homeless Bill of Rights, the Columbia River Keepers, Black Lives Matter, Healthcare for All Oregon, Anti-Displacement, Tennis United, Right to Be Safe, which is a self-defense class that happens once a month. Working Families of Oregon, Street Roots, Sister of the Road Cafe, 15 Now, and other camps like Hazelnut Grove and My Backyard, which is trying to be established out in outer southeast. We cater to everyone who comes through our gates, whether they're disabled, mentally ill, LGBTQ. We do not discriminate, and I would just like to say, we do our best to provide safety and warmth and love to our family, because these people are our family. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one point of clarification. You don't have children at the rest area, right?
That is correct.
So you mentioned about mothers keeping their babies. Could you just explain what you meant by that?
Sure. We have pregnant women who have came through the rest area, and we referred them to midwives instead of sending them to the hospital where the question is asked, if they're houseless or not, and that causes them to lose their children because they are required to report to the state that an individual is houseless.
The council also heard from several employees of Eastside Plating, one of whom appeared to almost bicker with council members over the company's use of the public right-of-way and exactly what kind of toxic chemical is transported there. The company currently uses the area near the proposed campsite and opposes R2-D2.
If the state of Oregon had sold that property to a private party and they proposed an industrial use for that site, we would have to approve it if it met our building code requirements, because it's an industrial district and this is a piece of land that you or I or anyone else could buy.
Right. Would that also require that you vacate Harrison Street to add to that property,
not
which is what this meeting is about?
No, not necessarily. But I'm saying that with the video you just showed us, shows you relying on the free available use of a piece of real estate plus the free and available use of this unbuilt city right-of-way in right. order to conduct.
Yes, we are showing the use of the city right-of-way and the we're taking advantage of the property that's been available for sale since the 1960s, when it was taken from the original owners through legal processes.
Okay. So can I follow up on something, Charlie? The video also shows the truck backing up. So can you help us understand why in the video they're able to navigate by backing up, but under the proposal that's before us, it would not be feasible?
All right. It's based on the view that the truck driver has. When he's at Harrison Street, he's able to curve, pull into there, and then straighten out, and then back up essentially straight. As he's coming down 3rd Avenue, 3rd Avenue curves at the point of Eastside Plating around this property underneath the overpass for the I believe it's the light rail. And so there's a very different, it's no longer a straight line of sight. So he would have to pull in past the point and then start making a curve on an already curved part of the street. So he no longer has visibility in his back as he's backing up. And there's traffic coming around a relatively blind corner at that point that may not see them as he's, or he may not see them either as he's trying to back up. So it's visibility from the Third Avenue and Division Street as he's trying to get there.
I'm not trying to argue the point, but I just want to ask you, if this is a monthly occurrence or even a weekly occurrence, couldn't there be measures put into place, including having a flagger or some group of people assisting to make it work if that was required?
Theoretically, I believe that is possible, but who would the flagger be, and do they have the right to actually stop people, and will people always do that as they're coming around through the...
I'm just asking. And then could you, again, just in plain English, tell us what sodium hydroxide is?
Sodium hydroxide is a... its common name is caustic soda. It's a high pH chemical. It's basically... it is sodium chloride is table salt. Sodium hydroxide is a sodium ion with hydroxide, which just, it has a really high pH, around 14. I mean, sodium hydroxide is as close to a common term as I can come up with. I don't know what else. Drano would be the most close thing.
It's a toxic chemical? Is it?
Or it depends on how you define toxic. If you go to the emergency response guide, the criteria that this would be categorized would be considered toxic, yes. Under the fire code, it is corrosive, not toxic.
If approved, tent camping would be allowed at the new site, with the city providing sanitation and hygiene facilities. The agreement would allow R2-D2 to remain for 10 years. After hearing from dozens of witnesses, Mayor Hales proposed a vote on the resolution, but Commissioner Novick asked for a delay until Wednesday. He explained that he wanted more time to discuss the matter with staff.
An Afghan man murdered in Tigard last week may have been the victim of a hate crime. Abdul Jamil Kamawal was found beaten to death with a shovel February 10th outside his family's home. Washington County sheriffs last week arrested Michael Troxell and charged him with the murder. Authorities say Troxell was doing maintenance work on the Kamawal's home. Kamawal may have been praying just before the attack. This is being investigated as a motive for it and could result in hate crime charges if proved. Kamawal was a beloved member of the Afghan community who founded two local charities supporting relief efforts in Afghanistan.
The Oregon House has joined the state Senate in passing a bill to raise the minimum wage for three different regions of Oregon over the next 6 years. The bill puts Oregon at the front of the pack for states considering higher minimum wages. Emmy Kunze of KBOO News, in conjunction with the Oregon News Service, has more.
The Oregon House has joined the state Senate in passing a bill to raise the minimum wage for three different regions of Oregon over the next 6 years. By 2022, the hourly minimum wage would increase to $14.75 in the Portland metro area, $13.50 in mid-sized cities, and $12.50 in rural areas. Governor Kate Brown promises to sign Senate Bill 1532. While Union President Rob Sisk of SEIU Local 503 says the legislation isn't perfect, he believes it's a step in the right direction.
We really want to commend the governor and the legislature for standing up to what were really some powerful forces, and in doing so, standing up for the welfare of workers on the bottom.
The bill passed the House narrowly with a vote of 32-26. Lawmakers had to suspend a discussion of the bill for about 20 minutes yesterday, Thursday afternoon, because the noise from protesters outside the House chamber was so loud. The bill's main opposition came from Republicans who believe raising wages will hurt small businesses. Proponents contend if workers are paid more, they'll spend more in the local economy. Supporters also hope the six-year lead-in and different minimums to suit different regions of the state will help businesses adjust to the change. Sisk says his union has talked with small business owners who have already raised minimum wages for their employees.
And have both understood the benefit to their own business, but also had this good awareness of the need for workers to survive.
As 2016 began, 14 states implemented higher minimum wages. Some cities, including Seattle and San Francisco, are in the process of raising their minimum wage amounts to $15 an hour. This is Emmy Kunze with KBOO News.
Toxicity data gathered from moss samples in the North Portland neighborhood of Kenton and the Southeast Brentwood-Darlington neighborhood indicate elevated levels of lead and nickel, respectively, in those areas. The data was released by Portland's top environmental regulator, the DEQ. Although a direct link has not been established between the concentrated toxins and a particular polluter, it is possible that the nickel plume in the Southeast could have originated from precision cast parts. The industrial manufacturer released 158 pounds of nickel into the atmosphere in 2014, according to the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. The new maps revealing elevated levels of toxicity in Portland neighborhoods follow the recent community discovery of high levels of cadmium and arsenic in the southeast neighborhood of Ladd's Addition, just north of Division Street. A spokeswoman for the DEQ stated that it's impossible to determine whether there are toxic levels in the air quality in the North Portland neighborhoods until more atmospheric and soil testing can be done.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. That will be followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Portland weather tomorrow, patchy fog with an 80% chance of showers and a low of 41. A slight chance of showers tomorrow with a high of 52, and mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a low of 39. Today in history, in 1942, President Franklin Roosevelt signed an Executive Order 96-6. The document ordered the removal of resident enemy aliens from parts of the West Coast vaguely identified as military areas. The order led to the creation of Japanese internment camps during World War II, which had lasting consequences for Japanese Americans. The quote of the day is from George Takei, a prisoner of a U.S.-Japanese internment camp as a child. He said, "It seems to me important for a country, for a nation to certainly know about its glorious achievements, but also to know where its ideals failed in order to keep that from happening again."
And it's 5:17, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
The basic problem facing the corporate and political powers who want you and me to swallow their Trans-Pacific Partnership deal is that they can't make chicken salad out of chicken manure. But that reality has not stopped their PR campaign, which pitches their salad as good and good for you. For example, a corporate front called the Peterson Institute for International Economics recently issued a study blaring the happy news that TPP will increase real incomes in the U.S. by $131 billion a year. Even if that was true, and plenty of other studies show that it's not, it's a statistic meant to dazzle rather than enlighten. For it skates around the real bottom line for the American public, an increase in income for whom? In the past 15 years or so, and especially since 2008, it's been made perfectly clear to the workaday majority of people that the corporate mantra of income growth benefiting everyone is a deliberate lie. Practically all of the massive annual increases in U.S. income, which every worker helps produce, now gushes up to the richest 1%, with millionaires and billionaires, the one-tenth of one percenters, grabbing the bulk of it. Economists have a technical term for this: stealing. TPP is written specifically to sanction and increase the robbery of the many by the world's moneyed few, including provisions that give additional incentives to U.S. manufacturers to ship more of our middle-class jobs to places like Vietnam, with minimum wages under 65 cents an hour. This is Jim Hightower saying, don't be bamboozled by glittery studies. TPP is a manure salad tossed together by the super-rich to further enrich themselves at our expense, and it would intentionally exacerbate the widening gulf of inequality in America. For information and action, go to citizen.org/trade.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Years of concern that the most common pesticide in the world is making consumers sick might finally be investigated by the Food and Drug Administration. Jamie Haddad has the story.
The Food and Drug Administration may begin testing foods such as corn and soybeans to measure levels of the pesticide glyphosate in several foods, a report in Civil Eats revealed. Lauren Schuer, a spokeswoman for the FDA, said that the organization could begin the process during the 2016 fiscal year. The Government Accountability Office, or GAO, has pressured the organization in the past to test glyphosate, the most widely used pesticide in the world. In a study published last year, the World Health Organization declared that the substance could potentially be carcinogenic, along the same level as working in a hair salon. Part of their evidence? A study from the Environmental Protection Agency back in 1986. The EPA later reversed their own words back in 1991, after reassessment of their earlier decision. Monsanto created the pesticide in the 1970s and used it as a primary ingredient in Roundup, the widely used weed killer. Farms around the world used over 1.6 billion pounds of glyphosate in 2014, a report in the Environmental Sciences Europe journal found. In the 1990s, Monsanto created Roundup Ready seeds, GMO crops specifically created with an immunity to glyphosate. The EPA already has intake regulations for pesticides in different foods, but analysts worry that people may be consuming more than the regulated allowance of glyphosate. Several independent agencies have already tested for amounts of glyphosate, finding traces in cereal, honey, flour, and even breast milk, according to a story in Reuters. In that same story last year, Monsanto's senior toxicologist Kimberly Hodge Bell stated, quote, "The mere presence of a chemical itself is not a human health hazard. It is the amount, or dose, that matters." The new testing could lead to serious modifications in the amount of pesticides, like glyphosate, humans consume, if current allowable levels are deemed too harmful. This is Jamie Haddad with KBOO News.
Albert Woodfox, one of the members of the group Three Prisoners dubbed the Angola Three, was released from the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, Louisiana, a penitentiary known as The Farm because it started its life as a plantation. Woodfox has been held in solitary confinement for 43 years and 10 months, the longest solitary confinement sentence served in American history. The Angola Three were initially imprisoned for robbery charges and became prison activists while they were in prison. In 1972, they were accused of killing a prison guard and subsequently were sent to solitary confinement. Before being sent to solitary, Woodfox helped found the prison's Black Panther chapter and became an activist who worked to improve life in the prison. Woodfox and the other of Angola Three helped organize petitions and hunger strikes to protest segregation in the prison and to end rape and violence. All of the Angola Three maintained their innocence throughout their imprisonment, and sufficient evidence for their convictions were never found as each one was released in time. Even the widow of the slain guard has stated that she believed the men are innocent and that any testimony at trial had been bought by the prison warden. Albert Woodfox was released on his 69th birthday, and a spokeswoman for the newsletter, The Angola Three, issued a thank you to all of the supporters who had signed petitions, written letters, or joined actions in support of The Angola Three over all of the years.
Harper Lee, author of the classic American novel To Kill a Mockingbird, has died at age 89. Lee was born April 28, 1936, in Monroeville, Alabama. To Kill a Mockingbird is the story of a girl nicknamed Scout growing up in a Depression-era southern town. A black man has been wrongly accused of raping a white woman, and Scout's father, lawyer Atticus Finch, defends him despite threats and scorn. Much of the plot and many of the characters were based on Lee's observations as a child in the Deep South during the 1930s. Published in 1960, the book quickly became a bestseller, won the Pulitzer Prize, and was made into a memorable movie in 1962. After the publication of the novel, Lee remained elusive for most of her life. She rarely gave interviews and wrote very little. In 2015, Lee shocked the world when her publisher announced the release of a second novel, Go Set a Watchman, a sequel set 20 years later.
The United Nations World Food Program is ramping up distribution of humanitarian aid in Syria as part of a tentative deal to gain access to at least 18 besieged towns. Shannon Young, reporting with our friends at freespeechradionews.org, has more.
The United Nations World Food Program is ramping up distribution of humanitarian aid in Syria as part of a tentative deal to gain access to at least 18 besieged towns. Aid convoys rolled into Mwadhamia on Thursday. WFP Syria Country Director Jacob Kern said it was the first time the agency has been able to distribute aid to the town's remaining 45,000 residents in more than a year and a half.
A lot of them are internally displaced, and it's appalling to see how their living conditions are. Even the people that live here are living in buildings that are half destroyed.
So far, aid convoys have reached five of the towns with a combined total of 80,000 remaining residents. A special task force of the International Support Group for Syria is continuing to negotiate access to besieged areas of the country, including through airdrops of aid. Jan Engelen, advisor of the Special Envoy for Syria, briefed the media after co-chairing a meeting of the task force.
We recognize that reaching now 80,000 people in the besieged areas, hopefully the rest of the 480,000 people in the besieged areas before long, it's only a first step, because the main task of access work here is to reach all of the millions of people in hard-to-reach areas. And Aleppo is only one of the hard-to-reach areas where we need to get access, and we need to get access now.
The Humanitarian Access Task Force is due to meet again next week. In related talks, negotiators from another committee were set to meet Friday in Geneva to discuss a temporary ceasefire. However, the meeting was postponed on short notice. For FSRN, I'm Shannon Young.
Ugandan election results will be announced tomorrow, but it's been a week mired in controversy for the African country. Current President Yoweri Museveni is seeking a fifth term in office. He's held the position for over 30 years. The opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, has been arrested three times in the past week. He unsuccessfully challenged Museveni in the past three presidential elections. Besigye worked as Museveni's former personal doctor, but has since become a vocal opponent. Yesterday, government officials blocked access to social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and WhatsApp. That move received public criticism from the U.S. Embassy in Uganda on Twitter. In the past week, police raided opposition headquarters and showered opposition supporters with tear gas at a rally in the capital, Kampala. With over half of polling stations already reporting results, Museveni currently leads the race with 62% of the vote. Besigye is polling at 33%. We'll be right back.
listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Emmy Kunzies, Natasha Delphine, Ron Haney, Kurt Bender, Jeff Henderson, Jamie Haddad, Sky McLeod, Dominique Anaya, and Megan LeMay. The producer is David Kesters, and our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Stay tuned now for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6, and have a great weekend. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Liam.